Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Last day of the AACHS, so thank you for still hanging around. So right now I'm a PhD student at West Virginia University, and today I'm going to talk about part of my dissertation study, which is looking at how the cooking, especially steaming, can eliminate the bitter taste of the methyl jasmonate treated broccoli. So I will briefly talk about what methyl jasmonate is and then how it affects the glucosinolate myrosinate system, and then just bring up some sensory quality of the broccoli, and then I will also talk about how our experiment was being conducted and how the steaming and MBJA will affect how the broccoli tastes. So methyl jasmonate, actually you probably have used that before because it can be isolated from the jasmine flower and it smells exactly just like jasmine. And other than it is commercially available, it is also very safe. So the lethal dose of the methyl jasmonate is actually higher than the salt, which makes it super safe. And also it's volatile, which means that when we are applying the methyl jasmonate as a plant growth regulator, we don't necessarily need to worry about the residual, of that. Also, we only use very small amounts of the methyl jasmonate, and then we can see the huge increasement of the glucosinolate, which the GLS here stands for, and I will talk about that in the next slide. And the mechanism that why we use methyl jasmonate as a plant growth regulator is because it involves in the plant-insect interaction. So basically, when we apply the methyl jasmonate, we are basically triggering the plant herbivory effects in the plants, and that's why glucosinolate can be upregulated, because glucosinolate actually played an important role in the herbivory against the insects. And we can use a methyl jasmonate acid to increase one type of glucosinolate neoglucose processing hugely. So, lucky or not, glucosinolate actually is one of the most widely studied plant secondary metabolites. And I guess it's probably related that in the Arabidopsis, they study the glucosinolate in Arabidopsis a lot. And not all glucosinolates are created equally. Based on its precursor amino acid, we can have major three types of the glucosinolates. And all of these three types have been associated with the anti-repellent activity from the literature. And now, when a plant is being attacked by the insects or being physically wounded, the endogenous enzyme, which is called myrosinase here, will mix with the glucosinolate and hydrolyze the glucosinolate to its corresponding hydrolysis product. So these hydrolysis products are actually the bioactive compound, not necessarily their precursor glucosinolate, but the hydrolysis products are the actually active ingredient that can do a lot of bioactivity, such as anti-cancer or even this anti-insect activity. The one thing is, this glucosinolate and the hydrolysis product has been associated with the bitterness before, so I know some of you here probably don't like to eat broccoli or Brussels sprout because you think that it's bitter. So some of evidence has been targeted to the glucosinolate and its hydrolysis compound, and unluckily, the neoglucose processing that can be arised by the methyl jasmonate acids also have been associated with the bitterness before. And also, if you have eaten horseradish, the pungent taste from the horseradish are from one of the hydrolysis products, which is called allyl-isothiocyanate. Another group of the compound that will affect the sensorial quality of the broccoli is those volatile. So, for example, dimethyl sulfide is a sulfur-containing volatile that it will probably be the major taste when you are chewing the broccoli, like a sulfur perception as what you are getting from. And we also have some aldehyde alcohols that also plays well in this sensory quality. And not even mention that in the broccoli or in the fruits, like the sugar, those primary metabolites, they also play a role in the sensorial quality. The interesting part is, although this glucosinolate has been associated with the bitterness, and the reason majority of the literature is looking at is because they have this diocyanine moiety in their structure. So as you can see here, the allyl isothiocyanate and sulforaphane, these two hydrolysis products, they all have this diocyanine moiety. The interesting thing is, although they say this moiety is related with the bitterness perception, the sulforaphane, which is probably one of the most popular hydrolysis products when we are talking about the anti-cancer activity of the broccoli, this product actually was not associated with the bitterness at all. So what we are seeing here is we probably still need to study a little bit more on how human perceives bitterness, and that also tells us that not all glucosinolate tastes bitter. Not all the hydrolysis tastes bitter. So if we want to adopt the dimethyl jasmonate as a plain growth regulator into the practice, we might need to really looking at how the consequence that if we apply that, if that will change the consumer preference for the broccoli. So that's our major question. So basically we profile the glucosinolate, its hydrolysis products, volatiles, and primary metabolites, and we utilize the partial least square regression to the sensory evaluation result. So basically what we're trying to see here is what type of the metabolite or which one the metabolites actually play contribution to the sensorial quality change. And also if the steaming will change the result. So I don't know if some of you been to the sensory evaluation, but what I did first is a triangle test. So you will be provided with the three broccoli, and one of them is different from the other two. So what we found is when the broccoli is served as raw, they can tell the difference between the control and the medial jasmonate treated broccoli. So that gives us a, not red flag, but a flag that something is going on with a raw broccoli. However, when we serve our panelists with the steamed broccoli, there's no preference. So they cannot They cannot tell the difference between the treated and the untreated one. That's what I'm trying to say. And then we do the attribute test, and it basically just like asks you to fill in the questionnaire and then do you like this thing or not. And then also the preference test asks you which one do you prefer. And as you can see here on the left side, with a raw broccoli, a lot of attribute is significantly lower in the methylmalonate treated broccoli. And the result also showing in the preference test, which our panelists prefer the control raw broccoli. But with the steam, as you can see, no significant difference at all, and no preference was detected as well. So that did give us some hints that right now we are looking at the metabolites. We already know because we have been doing this for a very long time. We know with the methyl jasmonate treatment, neoglucose processing and its hydrolysis product will be increased. And then when we're looking at the volatile, what we see is the sulfur volatiles and aldehyde are being decreased by this treatment. While the primary metabolites, which means sugars, amino acids, those things are insignificantly different. After steaming, that's the interesting part. So after steaming, we found that methyl jasmonate treated broccoli still hold much higher glucosinolate in the plant, in the broccoli, which may imply for higher nutritional quality because as long as you have a more glucosinolate in the broccoli, after you eat the broccoli, some gum microbiota can help you to hydrolyze those glucosinolate into the bioactive compound. But when we're looking at the hydrolysis products and the volatile, they are reduced to almost zero. And that's actually predictable because after the steaming, all of those heat during the steaming will deactivate the enzyme, and then that's why you are seeing the substrate cannot be changed. And then when we're looking at the partial least square regression, and this is actually very exciting for me because a neoglucose processing has been associated with the bitterness, but there's no data showing any of the sensorial quality of the neoglucose processing hydrolysis product. But what we're seeing here, all of these compounds play an important role to determine the sensorial quality effects. And these three metabolites you see here with the red color and bold, they are the neoglucose processing hydrolysis product. So we are starting to seeing that, this is not a direct evidence, but we start to seeing the very high contribution of this hydrolysis product to the sensor real quality. Now, this is a conductor model with the taste and flavor. If we're looking at the overall liking, that makes things more interesting because these hydrolysis products, they actually play more important role to determine the overall liking of the broccoli. So what we get from this study is consumer cannot detect the taste difference between the treated and untreated broccoli as long as steam. And if some of you have been involved in some food science research, you know that steaming usually considered as a milder cooking way. And but however, like a boiling will be a very worse method to cook broccoli. So if we in the milder cooking way we see this result, we are pretty confident that what we're seeing here will be able to apply to other way to cook broccoli. And in case you don't know, majority of the study indicate that 70 to 80% of the consumer that eat the broccoli cooked. I know some people eat raw, but majority of them eat cooked. And then also, this might be the first result that really showing the sensorial quality of the neoglucose processing hydrolysis product, and then give us some indication that if we are going to adapt MEJA into the agricultural practice used as a plant growth regulator, there's something that we need to consider if that really changes the sensorial quality and how we're going to play with this. So I would like to thank you all of my lab members, because if you ever been to the sensory evaluation, you know that takes a lot of people, a lot of preparation. And I also need to thank ASHS and WVU that give me the opportunity to present here. So that ends up, and we just recently published study, and because I'm running short on time, I might not be able to talk to you after this. If you are interested in the study, please take a picture of this slide, and then I have my email address here. And please don't feel free to email me about all the results, or if you want the PDF file of this, just email me. I'll be able to contribute that to you. And also, if you think what we are doing here is valuable to your lab, I'm graduating soon, so I'm taking this opportunity to find out my potential career opportunity, and please reach out to me. That I will be very happy to talk with you on the phone, or we can schedule the Skype. Now I will take any questions. Thank you. So the question is, if the methyl jasmonate is commercially available, and then if it is safe for food crop. If it's labeled as a food crop, okay. So yes, methyl jasmonate is available that you can buy in different places. And then isolated one is more expensive, but synthetic one is cheaper. And then it is, so under the EPA regulation, is being considered as generally recognized as safe. And then because it is volatile, and then we have, and you probably need to say that we have this approved by IRB, so it is safe to use that in the food crop. I hope that answers your question. Yeah. The cost of the application. Okay, so the question is, if we consider the cost of the basically methyl jasmonate application, and then would that be like profitable for the farm or something? So that actually is one part of my dissertation. So I do the cost-benefit analysis and working with the ag economists. What we found is, if you are a super small farm, that they might not be applicable, because, and especially with the smaller farm, they usually sell their product to the farmers market, so they are in the direct market, directly to the consumer. They have a consumer like buy that as eating as raw, so that might not be applicable. But if today you are looking at a bigger scale farm, or you know, have like a contract working with the food industry, that they know have a contract broccoli and then going to the wholesale or going to the food processing industry, I think that might be able to be profit. Yeah. So if I remember correctly, for one broccoli plant, the cost of a methyl jasmonate is $0.03. Yeah. So how much you can sell, they will not depending on the market, but what we know is about the cost.